to ESIB's Global Economy Podcast. My name is Fredrik Eriksson, and today I'm talking to Matthias Bauer. Matthias is a colleague of mine here at ESIB. He's a senior economist, and he has been working on lots of different subjects in the past. But in the past years, he's been writing several papers and done a lot of work around digitalization and the digital economy. And in the past year, of course, we at ESIB have focused quite a lot on the idea of introducing a special corporation tax on digital companies. And that is also the theme for our conversation here today. Welcome to the podcast, Matthias.
Glad to be here, Frederick.
So you've written extensively on this idea of introducing special taxes on digital companies. Can you first start by walking us through what has happened and what is going on right now? Are countries introducing these taxes?
Yeah, several countries are playing with the idea to introduce special taxes on what they call digital services. Some countries have already imposed digital services taxes, like France, for example, even though the French digital services tax is, how I would call it, in the freezer right now, because the US government threatened to retaliate against a couple of companies that provide non-digital goods and services in the US. Then we have our countries like Italy, that recently introduced the digital services tax. Austria, another country, the UK just announced to have a digital services tax from April 2020. The Spanish government is introducing a digital services tax. And all of these initiatives go back to a debate about corporate taxation in general and large companies in particular not paying a so-called fair share of tax. And based on this debate, the European Commission stepped ahead with the idea and an actual proposal to introduce taxes on digital services in 2017. The EU did not go ahead with this proposal because a couple of member states, like Sweden, for example, Ireland, and a few others, opposed the idea. And that's why we see a sort of a spread of the introduction of these taxes in some EU countries. And we also see it outside the EU. A few governments are playing with the idea to introduce these taxes. Some of them are still waiting for an action by the OECD. Action means that the OECD is currently reconsidering the rules for international corporate taxation in general, with a specific focus on companies that provide digital services. And as soon as consensus arrived at the OECD, then the expectation among many policymakers, not all policymakers, but many policymakers, is that you would have a more harmonized set of rules for corporate taxation in general, but also the taxation of digital companies in the future, and thereby avoiding the dissemination of national digital services taxes.
All right. And if we look at the specific measures that either have been introduced or have been proposed or perhaps have been decided but are in the freezer right now, are these measures similar to each other or are there differences between them? I think what I'm looking for here is basically sort of a, for those who haven't followed this debate, if you can sort of say a little bit about the actual design. Is it a traditional corporate income tax, or is it more of a VAT-like measure that they're introducing on the sales from digital services firms?
Yeah, you need to realize that a digital services tax, based on the proposal that we have seen in the past, is a sort of a hybrid. It is a tax that needs to be paid by a corporation, so it is a corporate tax in a way. On the other hand, it is a tax that is based on the revenues from sales of certain services, digital services. And on top of that, because of the design of the tax, it is a tax essentially that hits large companies by design, particularly companies that import from other countries, like, for example, the US, to some extent China. So it has the characteristics of a tariff at the same time. So it is a hybrid of a corporate tax, a sales tax, and a tariff. The measures that countries contemplated or already imposed are similar to the extent that they target a bunch of services that are defined as online intermediation services. That would be, for example, a company pursuing a business model like Amazon or also Netflix, intermediating product services or digital content via the internet, via online platforms. Then you have online advertisement services that would primarily hit companies like Facebook and Google who sell advertisements to individuals and businesses. And then there's a third kind of service that's about the transmission and collection of data, even though some countries, like France, for example, did not pursue businesses that engage in the transmission and sales of data. Hungary, for example, exclusively focused on advertisement services. The UK pursued a different approach. And then we also see differences in the applied tax rates. So, for example, the EU proposal, which has not been implemented yet, foresees a 3% tax rate on revenues. In France, it's also 3%. And in Austria, the tax rate is 5%. I think Hungary is a sort of an outlier with an even higher tax rate. And the question obviously is, when more and more governments decide to go ahead with a digital services tax, are they going to change the tax rate as well at any time soon or over a longer period of years? And history tells us that for many sorts of types of taxes, the tax rate actually increased over time. So I think the 3% is a number that is popular among policymakers right now, but we already heard claims from politicians at the EU level, but also in France, that digital services should be taxed at an even higher rate in the future.
You mentioned that there is also ongoing work in the OECD that member countries have been for a couple of years now, talking, perhaps even negotiating, establishing new principles or a new system that will allow countries to better account for the fact that the economy has changed with digitalization and that there may be new type of situations in the economy right now when it comes to corporate income tax that needs different types of policy responses. Can you walk us through a little bit about what is it that the OECD has proposed so far? What is it that member states are in practice talking about there?
It is generally difficult to make sense of the debate that happens at the OECD level, particularly for people that are not tax experts. The whole process about reforming corporate tax rules, it started in 2010, extended to 2014-15 with measures being announced and later implemented under the scope of the Base Erosion and Profit Shifting BEPS initiative. And then in 2017, policymakers, OECD officials, but also governments that participate in this process increasingly focused on the adverse implications for the collection of taxes resulting from digitalization. And this resulted in two concrete proposals that are being discussed and shaped right now. The first one is about reallocating corporate tax revenue from the places where companies are based or headquartered to places where they sell their products and services. Originally, policymakers were talking about digital companies who easily sell digital services from one country where they are based to another where they just sell. Now we are also seeing proposals for so-called consumer-facing industries, and that can be pretty much every industry because, after all, every industry is directly or indirectly producing for the final consumer. And the second proposal that we see being debated right now is about the introduction of a global minimum tax. And the intention here is to tax profits that are untaxed, basically, in certain jurisdictions. And all of these ideas are debated, I would say, controversially, because no one really knows how the impacts from the implementation of such measures would look like. I should probably talk a bit about the impact of corporate taxes in general, which is, I would say, largely unknown to ordinary citizens. And the debate also tells us that the impacts of corporate taxes are to a large extent unknown by policymakers and even tax experts who are to a large extent shaping the process of tax reform. In 2010, for example, the OECD still said that corporate taxes are most harmful to economic activity, economic growth. Now they even want to impose a higher corporate tax burden on companies globally. So why is it actually a bad idea to have a corporate tax in the first place? There are two reasons. The first one is that having corporate taxes distorts people's perceptions about the distributional effects of taxes in general. So basically, we do not know much about what people really pay in taxes after paying taxes on labor income, taxes on consumption expenditure, because a corporate tax indirectly reduces wages and salaries and indirectly increases consumer prices, which then, of course, impacts on the net burden of citizens. And then bearing in mind that the overall political narrative objective of the underlying this whole debate is to increase fairness in taxation in general, then having a corporate tax in place actually means that people have very distorted perceptions about fairness, because you do not really know who is paying what in tax in a certain year, who is actually contributing to a fair tax system, and who's not contributing to a fair tax system.
Is this, Matthias, what economists call tax incidence? That even if the actual tax bill may be paid by a company, they are going to transfer the cost of the tax to someone else, and that can be labor, for instance, or it can be consumers. Is that what you're talking about now?
That is what I'm talking about, in essence, the tax incidence. Every tax is finally borne by individuals, by us, in our capacity as consumers, workers, or even owners and investors, the owners of a company and investors. And the economic literature tells us that workers actually bear the largest part of the burden imposed by corporate taxes. Between 50 and 70% of the overall tax burden in terms of tax revenue. Some researchers point to overshooting effect because of foregone investment. So a corporate tax generally reduces a company's disposable income. A company is then less able to increase wages and salaries, less able to invest. And foregone investment means that there will be less productive capacity and often less employment in the future, which depresses wages and salaries. Then the corporate tax burden is also passed on to consumers, which suffer from higher prices for products and services in general. And of course, the remainder actually goes to the owners of the companies and the investors. And my perception is that the whole debate about corporate taxes is distorted in a way that policymakers, politicians primarily think that if you have a corporate tax in place, you only tax the rich guys. So from that point of view, having a corporate tax in place is contributing to tax progressivity or perceived fairness in taxation. But what you really see in the literature is that workers are bearing the largest part of the burden. Consumers are bearing a very large part of the burden. So at the end of the day, if you think about it, corporate tax avoidance is actually good for tax progressivity. And tax progressivity, meaning that those who earn more, those who are more productive, pay more in tax. Tax progressivity is actually a principle in taxation that is shared by most political party spectrums. But this is not at all reflected in debate. We have a very distorted debate. And the second reason why having a corporate tax is not a good idea is it is actually a tax on economic development. If you tax a corporation, you tax very productive entities. You tax entities that build streets, that build cars, that engage in research and development with respect to new medicines and so on and so forth. If you tax away the capacity to do all this kind of stuff, then you are taxing economic development. And this is probably not what policymakers' intention should be in the first place.
All right, so let's put it like this. So what you say right now applies to basically all companies, right? So if we have a corporate income tax, we're going to have these depressive effects on economic development, and that will spill over to labor, consumers, shareholders and owners of firms. But what do you make of the other argument, which is pretty prevalent today, which is that all that may be true, but we still have a situation where, at least allegedly, the digital companies don't pay these taxes. These are taxes that only apply to non-digital firms or bricks and mortar type of firms. So let's say if you are sort of a big industrial firm in Europe or America, you may feel a bit disadvantaged. Perhaps you may feel that you are unfairly treated because you have to pay these taxes, but Google, Amazon, they don't have to pay these taxes. What do you make of that argument?
Yeah, the corporate tax is the most complex tax that currently exists. The problem is that the corporate tax is so complex that even tax experts cannot tell you which company is paying what in a certain jurisdiction and whether this is fair or not. In 2017, the Commission launched a communication campaign stating that digital companies do not pay a fair share of tax, referring to the largest digital companies that are currently headquartered in the US, like Google, Facebook, Amazon, also Apple. And it argued that these companies only pay between 8 and 9% in tax in the EU, whereas traditional companies, non-digital companies, how they call it, pay between 20 and 23%. It turned out, however, that when you look at what companies really paid in tax over the past 6-7 years or so, that digital companies, generally companies that to the large extent pursue digital business models like the GAFA companies, they paid more in tax than so-called non-traditional companies. You can, for example, compare the effective corporate tax rate of stock market indices like the MSCI World Index for software companies or technology companies, compare that with indices which are comprised to a large extent by traditional companies. And you find that it's not only the large digital companies that pay more in tax than traditional non-digital companies, it's also the smaller companies that pursue all sorts of digital or software-driven business models that pay more in tax on average than non-digital companies. And then you ask yourself, why did the Commission promote these numbers on Twitter, Facebook, and even official publications? And it turned out that these numbers are based on a theoretical model that was fed with assumptions and information on national tax codes in the EU. And we should bear in mind that tax is not an exclusive competence in the EU. We still have 28 or now 27 different corporate tax codes with different characteristics, different tax rates, different tax exemptions, and so on and so forth. And there were a few scientists commissioned by the European Commission that set up a model based on this information, and they arrived with numbers that were then quoted by the Commission, suggesting that digital companies are per se undertaxed, which requires political action. The researchers themselves, they deny that digital companies are generally undertaxed. They also urge the Commission not to disseminate this information any further, but the Commission's high-level officials still went out to the public and on social media and stated that digital companies are undertaxed. So in general, the truth is that they paid more in tax in the past than traditional companies. You can, for example, look at companies like Renault, or Volkswagen, two large European car makers, which show very, very low effective corporate tax rates for a quite long time. Similarly, a few state-owned companies, partly state-owned companies like Deutsche Telekom in Germany, Deutsche Post in Germany, very relatively low effective corporate tax rates. And you find these companies pretty much everywhere in the EU, in Spain, in Italy, also in the United Kingdom. So if you are a friend of corporate taxation, I'm not a friend of corporate taxation, but if you are an advocate of corporate taxation and you're interested in maintaining or achieving fairness in corporate taxation, then you should focus on all sorts of companies and all sorts of business models, irrespective of what the ingredients of these business models are, whether they are physical assets or knowledge or software and so on and so forth. And this is something that should be done. Focusing on a niche of the economy, companies that provide certain digital services, is not helpful. Also bearing in mind that economies get more and more digitalized. So what's a traditional company today will be a much more digitalized company in the future.
I find this really fascinating because, I mean, it's not just the European Commission, but many other governments and, of course, campaigners, NGO organizations, etc., that have been pretty successful in conveying a message, which is that the digital companies are the villains. They are the ones that are escaping tax, while they may perhaps also want to tax non-digital firms more, or at least get more revenues from these companies. They tend to focus most of their attention to the digital firms. But what you're saying is basically based on real tax data, based on real observations, you cannot make the claim that these digital firms are taxing less than non-digital firms are doing. Finally, Matthias, I'm interested to pursue sort of a couple of lines of thoughts around what will happen when countries go ahead with these taxes unilaterally. You brought this up when we began this conversation that, for instance, France has introduced a tax, but they put it in the freezer because they've been threatened with retaliation from the United States. When you presented sort of what has been happening in different countries in Europe and also going through the European Commission proposal, I can't help sort of feeling that many of these policies are pretty much designed in order to target specific companies. And we can almost name which these companies are because they tend to be big American software companies. And if you add to this context what you just said, which is that when you look at the effective corporate tax rate, many of these digital firms are actually paying higher taxes than non-digital firms are doing. So it's difficult to escape the feeling that many of these taxes are targeting specific American software companies while they are avoiding taxing their domestic firms more than they're doing right now. And I would suppose if that's the line of policy that you are going to pursue as a government, you will pretty quickly run into opposition from other countries who will legitimately make the claim that what you're doing is protectionism. This is discrimination. You're just sort of taxing firms from one country while you're exempting your own domestic firms from that particular embrace of special corporate income taxes.
Exactly. This is what we already saw in the dispute between government of France and the United States. USTR, the United States Trade Representatives, just published the results of an investigation into the French digital services tax. And they argued that the French digital services tax, like the EU's proposal, is discriminatory by design. It only hits large companies that provide certain services, and it happens that most of these companies are headquartered in the United States, some of them headquartered in China. Only, I think, two or three companies are actually headquartered in the EU. So, for example, a company that falls under the scope of the French digital services tax needs to show worldwide revenues of not less than 750 million euro. And in France, the threshold level for revenues in the country, in France, was 25 million euro. So if you look at the companies that may fall under this new regulation, then you arrive at a list of companies that is relatively short. and consists of many US-based companies. Now, when it comes to retaliation, UST argued that this tax is discriminatory by design and it merits retaliatory measures. And the US actually made a very interesting, I would say, from my point of view, merited suggestion. And that would be to introduce a special tax or a special import tariff on imports of wine and champagne products from France. And I think this is merited because if you think about this digital services tax in more abstract terms, it is equivalent to an import tariff. The argument, let's say the one of the strongest arguments the advocates of a digital services tax have is that companies that are based in some jurisdictions make a lot of money in other countries, whereby the profit from their revenues is exclusively taxed in the country where they are currently headquartered. This is a general argument, which is very often quoted by those who argue in favor of digital services taxes. Physical presence in their market jurisdictions. And this is particularly true for small and medium-sized companies. So if you have a French winemaker, for example, that is making, I don't know, 50% of its revenue in the United States, while at the same time, the profits from these revenues, which are made in the US, are exclusively taxed in France, then this is a problem if you believe in the reasoning of the promoters of the digital services tax. So thinking of it in this kind of abstract term, from a bird's eye perspective, the digital services tax is not as merited as it may seem if you also think about where hundreds of thousands of our companies make their revenues and where they currently have to tax the profits that they make from these revenues. So from that point of view, it is discriminatory in many ways. And if you want to change it, you either get rid of corporate taxes at all, or you have to change the system for every single company, irrespective of what business model it applies, which technology it runs, and where it is based.
All right. Thank you very much, Matthias. It's been a great pleasure talking about these issues. Thanks so much for joining the podcast.
Thank you very much.